This is week six of this series, The Leader in You, working through concepts of effective leadership on all levels. Just wanted to point out, just a housekeeping thing, that this series goes for one more week, in other words, today and next week, and then after that we'll have 3 weeks from the 8th to the 22nd of September. We'll do another series timely leading up to the new year called Fixing Mistakes, How to Fix What We Have Messed Up. So that should be an exciting topic. But this one on leadership will be today and next week will be the last one. Okay, so just a little bit of review from last week. So last week we talked about, in the context of leadership, the concept of dreams. So we talked about, in a figurative way, we talked about the importance of dreaming, thinking beyond, not being stuck in what we're used to, being creative, being innovative, thinking beyond the limitation of what we normally are accustomed to, and so on. And then we talked about the importance of encouraging others to dream. The people who we lead, the people who we can inspire, the people who have an influence over, to let them dream, to empower them to dream, to help them interpret their dreams, and so on. And then finally, we talked about the real hard challenge, which is the combination of dreams and implementing dreams, because dreams by definition are innovative, beyond creative, but then you've got to go to a different phase and a different sort of personality mindset, which is the idea of detail and implementation, which is very, very different. And we talked about the imagery in Jacob's dream, where you had the ladder, which was firmly on the ground, and yet its top was in the heaven. In other words, the combination of thinking unlimited, infinitely in the heaven, but still being rooted on the ground, or as the dream continues, the Malachei Elohim, the angels of God, which were Olim v'Yordim, they went up and came down. And we asked about the order, how come going up and then down, but we said that's the concept of dreams. The idea is to first think big, to go up, to just to think beyond, but then have the ability of Yordim to bring it down, to be able to take place in a reality in the real world and in the practical world. The idea of combining vision with detail, creativity with implementation. Okay. Today, I want to explore a couple of things which probably, when you put them together, create and encapsulate the essence of a good leader, again, on all levels, even if the circle of influence is very small. And I want to do that by looking at a small passage in the Chumash, in the Torah, to do specifically with leadership. It's one of the small passages that not only we learn leadership lessons from, but actually directly deals with the concept of leadership, where we see surface in that passage the essential qualities of what it takes to inspire others, what it takes to lead others, to lift others, to guide others. Let me just give you the background. An amazing passage. Actually, we're just in the weekly parsha a few weeks ago. When Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, comes to the end of his life, and therefore the end of his leadership, for him it's an unfortunate reality, because he had so hoped to go into the land of Israel. In fact, he had prayed to God. The Pasuk tells us he had prayed to God strongly 515 times to be able to have permission to go into the land of Israel. And that's, by the way, a side issue, but it's a good lesson in prayer. When we pray to God, it's like children talking to a parent. We've got a nudge. And it doesn't matter. That's fine. But sometimes it's just not meant to be. So God said to him, Rav lach, no, enough. You've got to stop now. Because if you continue praying, I'm going to have to listen to you. So God said, that's it. And your lot, your destiny is not to go into the land of Israel. He allowed him to go up in a mountain to see the land. But you will not be able to go into the land of Israel, and you will not be able to lead the Jewish nation further than the journey in the desert. So then Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, changes track completely after that. And we find a very strange verse in the Torah. I say strange because one of the most common verses in the Torah is Vayidaber Hashem o Moshe Lemor, and God spoke to Moses saying. Suddenly we find a verse that's the reverse. It says Vayidaber Moshe el Hashem Lemor. And Moses spoke to God saying, in other words, Vayidaber means strong speech. Moses approaches God in a very strong and assertive way. And he says, okay, fine, I'm not going to the land of Israel, but I've got something to talk to you about. And he says the following. Basically, he talks about his succession and he asks God that he cannot leave the Jewish people without leadership, and therefore he's going to have to appoint a leader. Now, I put the passage of what he says on the handout. Let's read it together. He says, and he says a few different things, and I've put each concept on a different line because I want to go through each one separately. He says to God, he says, may the Lord, the God of spirits of all mankind, which in Hebrew is Elokei HaRuchot, the God of spirits of all mankind. What should that God do? He should appoint a man, and he uses the term Ish, which we'll come to in a second, over this community. What will this Ish do? What will this leader do? This leader will be someone to go out and come in before them. Shayetzev Lifnehem, to go before them. And one who will lead them out and bring them in. That's what he says. Why do I need all of this, says Moses? Because so God's people will not be like a sheep without a shepherd. Okay. So firstly, it's an amazing passage only because here we see true leadership in Moses' part, the selflessness, the true selflessness of a leader. Here's someone who really wanted to continue leading. He really wanted to go into the land of Israel. He was not given permission, but as soon as that became a reality, he put himself aside. And as Rashi points out, his mind was completely shifted, not to think about himself, but to think about the good of what was going to happen to the community. And he says to God, you know, sometimes leaders, you know, we've talked about this before, the difference between power and influence or power and inspiration. Sometimes leaders are there for power, there for control, and if they can't get it, to them what happens to the flock or what happens to people is of completely no interest. But in Moses' case, it was not like that. A true leader is not about himself or herself. A true leader is about the people that are being led. And therefore, when it becomes a reality that he won't be able to lead the Jewish nation, his primary concern becomes what is going to be with them, what is going to happen to them, and therefore he implores God, fine, if it can't be me, I understand, because you don't want to let me into the land of Israel, but you need to appoint someone who could lead them because they cannot remain a flock without a leader. Which must have been a very difficult thing for him, an emotional thing for him to go through, to face that reality. But nevertheless, that's the request that he comes to God with. Now, as I said, there's really four parts. There's four parts to his request. One is that he calls God in this passage, which is not a normal terminology. He called God the spirits of all mankind, number one. He talks about appointing an Ish, significant as we'll see. Talks about going out and coming in before them, and he talks about a leader who can lead them out and bring them in. And the commentaries explain, and I'm putting different commentaries together, inspired again by the works of Rabbi Sacks, who comments on this verse, and others. The truth is that in these four sentences, or these four things, lie the essence of good leadership. And let's understand. So the first thing is, he talks about God being the God of, what do you call it, the spirits of all mankind. What does that mean? So Rashi says, the commentators, other commentaries also, that what he was saying is that we know that although God is one, and that's fundamental to Jewish belief, the oneness of God, we say Hashem Echad, but God didn't create people as one, as we know. God created people to be completely different. As we know, as the Talmud says, we've mentioned this many, many times, just as people, no two people look alike, no two people think alike. So in other words, you are the God of the spirits of all mankind. In other words, there is a nation, there's a community, a couple of million, a few million. There's a community where every person thinks differently. This goes back very, very early. It's not a new phenomenon that when you have two Jews, there's three opinions, right? This is an old thing. And being that we know we're talking about a Jewish nation, it's also not just a joke. It's said in jest, but it's not just a joke. Because when God took the Jewish people out of Egypt, he called them, and Moses referred to them as Am Kashay Oref, a stubborn nation. And a stubborn nation, we know, it can be bad, it can be good. It's just not always meant as a negative. As many of the commentators point out, it's meant as a positive. It's a nation of strength. It's a nation of resilience. It's a nation of determination. It's a nation who are prepared to fight on and keep going, which is the secret to our survival and our eternity and our destiny. But with that strength comes strength. It comes opinions, comes views, comes strong views. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, you've got a nation that everyone thinks differently and strongly so. And therefore you need, as Rashi changes around the phrase, he says, you need to appoint a leader, asher ruach bo. You need to appoint a leader who will embrace diversity, who will embrace the differences between the thinking of every person, who will understand the concept that every person has a different way of looking at things, every person has a different way of doing things, every person has a different perspective, a different opinion, a different way of expressing him or herself, and everyone's got just a different path, a different journey. And a leader has to be able to understand that. A leader cannot want to lead in the context of cloning everyone that they lead so they all think alike and are on the same way. It doesn't work like that. Everyone is going to understand and do things differently. In fact, we know that diversity, in other words, differences, is actually at the very, very essence of how God designed the world. The Talmud says that no two flakes of snow look exactly the same. No two blades of grass are exactly the same. No fingerprint is exactly the same. Right? The Talmud talks about raining, a timely discussion. Right? That every drop of rain, it doesn't matter how hard the rain comes down, as we know, it can come down very hard. But no matter how hard the rain comes down, it never comes down as one gush of water. Every drop is separate. Every drop is distinct from the other drop. Why? Because the greatness of the world lies in differences and not in sameness. Just like we talked about before, the greatness and depth of relationships do not live in the sameness of people, but actually come out and are expressed and revealed in the differences between people, the different viewpoints between people. So therefore, God, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses says to God, you've got to, number one, you've got to be able to appoint someone, because you are the Lakeya Ruchas, you are the author of the spirits of man. You are the author of the person who has designed everyone to think and look and express themselves or feel differently. And therefore you need to appoint a leader who will be able to understand that. That is such an important thing, by the way, no matter how we lead. It could be you leading three people. It could be you're managing three people. It could be you're a parent of two children. It could be you just have a very small circle of friends. But it's always the case that there are going to be differences. No matter, as soon as you have more than one person, there's differences. And any person in any position of inspiration, direction, or guidance or leadership has to be able to let everyone express themselves in their way. Parents know this the best. The first failure of any parent is when you try to mold all children to think and express themselves in one way, in one journey. It just doesn't work. So that's the first thing Moses says. You've got to appoint a leader who can do that, who won't shun diversity but will embrace it. However, and here comes the big however, Moses goes on to tell God that it's not enough, because the downside of that is that sometimes people think that embracing diversity means pandering to everyone's, probably the best way to say it is use the Yiddish expression, everyone's mishagasen. Everyone's craziness, right? A leader does not mean someone who panders to everyone's weaknesses or strengths or views. A leader is someone who embraces differences, but leads. That's the key word, to lead. And we need to understand that, how that works. So that goes to the next thing that Moses says, which is appoint an ish, a man. Now, the emphasis on the word ish here is not on it's not a gender thing. The word ish here is, there are very many different descriptions for human beings. There's Adam, there's Ish, there's Gever, there's Enosh, there's different terminologies that are used to describe the human. One of them is Ish. What does Ish mean? Normally Ish is a sign of strength. And what is amazing here is that it's interesting that Moses himself used the word Ish. Because with regard to Moses, we find in the Torah the description Ish twice, in two opposite ways. Listen to how this works. One time at the very beginning, when Moses was still in Egypt and he was leading the Jewish people out of Egypt, it says, Ki ha'ish Moshe gadol. This ish, this man Moshe, was great. A man of strength. A leader. A person who could take the nation with him. He could take a people who had been persecuted for over 200 years, a people who had been downtrodden, who were in the dumps, who were giving up hope, they were desperate, they were despondent, and he was able to lift them, take them, guide them, direct them, and pull them out of Egypt with tremendous strength, notwithstanding that he was talking about 3 million of them. And they gave him plenty of tzoras. It wasn't like, you know, they were smooth, right? They challenged him many, many times, and yet he was able to do that. Why? Because as a leader, he was a person of strength. He led. He took them. He was in front. He led. That's the one time it says the word Ish by Moses. The other time it says the word Ish by Moses the other way around. It says, Ki Ish Moshe, this man Moses, Anav Me'od Mikol Adam, he was the most humble of all men. What Moses stood out for, as we've talked about many times, is his humility. That he was able to relate to everyone. He was able to attend to detail. He was able to lower himself. He didn't hold himself superior. As a leader, as a man of strength, he had that strength. He had that leadership quality, yet it wasn't something which gave him the arrogance to portray himself as someone who's superior to others. As I think I mentioned last week, at the burning bush, there was this whole concept that God chose Moses as a leader because he saw him running after a small little shepherd, a small little goat, to because he was thirsty. And that was Moses. Moses could deal with the lowest of people and the highest of people, the weakest, the strongest. It didn't matter because it wasn't about him. So yet he had that strength, but the strength was not arrogance. It was strength of leadership together with an incredible sense of humility. And it's that humility, right? It's that humility which on the one, it's the humility which gave him the ability to understand everyone's viewpoint, not to be stubborn, not to be stuck in his own ego, not to be able to not see the view of the individual. It was the humility that gave him the ability to be able to appreciate and embrace the differences and diversity of each and every single person. And it was the combination of that humility with inner strength that gave him the ability that notwithstanding the differences that exist with everyone, he was able to lead. And what does leadership mean in terms of strength? See, sometimes people lead in a way where they go crazy. They seek popularity. You know, there's the expression, we've got to hold the team together. So what do they do by holding a team together? Often leaders, in order to hold the team together, they will say one thing to one person, another thing to another person, because you don't want to upset anyone, you know? You can't upset anyone, so they erroneously package the leadership experience in a way where, well, you know, if you come see me, I'll tell you what you want to hear. If you come see me, I'll tell you what you want to hear. At the end, of course, that shows up, it's exposed, and it's an absolute mess, and there's just no leadership. Instead of leadership, there's complete weakness and chaos. Right? Because a leader leads by showing confidence. A leader leads by setting the tone. A leader leads by showing strength. And sometimes that means that a leader has to do things and say things and create foundations that are not popular. We find it in the story of Purim. We find it in ancient story. We find it in modern story. We find it in the story of Purim, where at the end of the Megillah, you know, the story of Purim, if you ask any kindergarten child who's the hero of the story of Purim, they'll tell you Mordechai. Mordechai was the undisputed leader of the Jewish nation at the time. There were many great sages, but he was the hero. He got Esther to become the queen. He got Esther to intervene on behalf of the Jewish people. He was instrumental in bringing everyone to do tshuva, to repent, to reconnect to the Judaism, etc., etc. And yet, if you have a look at the very end of the Megillah, there's a very obscure verse. By the time everyone's finished hearing the Ganze Megillah, no one's got patience anymore for the last few verses. Right. And it says, over there, it describes Mordechai. And it says that Mordechai ended up continuing to be a great leader. And it says there, Ratsui Lerov Echav. He was a great leader. You know why? Because he was very popular. And it says popular and accepted L'rov Echav, most of his colleagues. That's a great compliment, you know. You say to a guy, pretty good guy. He's accepted by most people, not everyone. Why? Because that's a leader. Mordechai was such a leader that he knew he had to do what was right. He had to do what was good for the Jewish people. He had to do what was good for the people who was leading. He had to do what was good for the situation, even if it meant that some of the things he did and he instructed and he guided with was not accepted and was not agreed upon. And Mordechai and his own colleague base had people who rejected him because they didn't agree with what he was doing. And the Talmud explains it has to do with his political involvement, and they weren't sure if he should be involved politically, he shouldn't. Whatever the case was, he did what was needed to be done. Most people agree with him, but it wasn't so popular. Moses himself wasn't so popular the same all the time. Moses, the greatest leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, today we call him, Moses, our teacher, there were times where the Jewish people gave him a very rough time and he did things that weren't popular, and they started to talk all sorts of things about him, and they started to make up stories about him and so on. I mean, it's all in the Rashi and the commentaries. It's not easy for a leader, because leaders have to understand and appreciate and embrace everyone's differences, but yet they have to lead. Modern leaders like that. I mean, you know, you think of people who we think of leaders. You know, Rabbi Sachs brings his book. You know, Churchill is always considered a great leader. There were times that he was completely rejected. Until he became prime minister, he was considered a nothing, a complete failure. Afterwards, he was thrown out. But during the war, he was considered a great leader, because it doesn't always work like that. People are not always popular, because leadership is not about looking for popularity. Leadership is about leading people, connecting to people, understanding differences, but leading. Now, let's take that a bit further. What does it actually mean? There's a very famous TED talk, which I'm sure many of you might have seen, by a guy called Simon Sinek, I think you pronounce it. Right? He talks about leadership more in the commercial world, but he shares a very beautiful idea. And he talks about the strength of leadership and the success of some companies to lead above others. And he talks about the what, the how, and the why. If you ask many, many, many companies or many things what they do, they'll tell you the what. You know, it's the what. So he talks about, for example, he gives an example of the Apple company. Steve Jobs, the Apple company, and so on. He talks about the what. The what is we make computers, or we make gadgets, or we make iPhones, or whatever the case is. Then sometimes people go a little bit deeper than the what, and they talk about the how. So it's not what we do, it's how we do it, right? But he says that's not what brings success. It was a famous landmark sort of TED talk that he gave. What brings ultimately the greatest leadership is when people are able to communicate and share the why. Now, the why doesn't mean the why as in a reason. Obviously, when you make a company, for example, the why means the why is because you want to make money. That's the why. But the why is much more than that. The why is, what is the driving force behind everything that's done? What's the driving force? What's the passion? What's the values that drive all of this? Now, just out of interest, I mean, he talks about it in a business context. So he talks about the Apple company. Their why is to challenge the status quo. In other words, people think that there's a certain model of technology out there. Their thing is always to challenge the status quo, that we can do it better, we can produce something much more creative, we can be innovative, we can push the limits, and so on and so forth. Which is why it goes in all sorts of directions. It inspires people in phones and computers and in laptops and in who knows what, right? Why? Because it's not about what do we do in a specific area. There's a sort of driving force behind it all. It's the driving force, it's the passion, it's the raison d'etre, it's the real essence of what is driving everything in the company. And he says, when people are able to communicate the why, the why inspires people. The why makes people connect to who you are. And I'm going to come back to what I was talking about in a minute about leadership, but let's just explore this a bit. In Judaism, or in any area of leadership for that matter, there's a lot of what's, and certainly a lot of how's, right? In Judaism particularly, that Judaism is a religion of action, doing mitzvot between man and man, between man and God, but it's a lot of, I mean, we have 613 commandments, right? There's a lot of do's and don'ts. So there's an incredible amount, on the one hand, in other words, on the surface, it's all about the what's. And of course, when you do about the what's, then it's about the how's. But when you want to inspire someone, a leader doesn't inspire someone with the what's and the how's. You teach the what's in the house when you need to, but that's not what inspires people. What inspires people, a true leader, is someone who can communicate the why, can communicate the excitement, the passion, the driving force, the values which are beneath and driving and inspiring and igniting the what's in the house. That's what leadership is. Okay. In other words, that's the essence, it's the purpose, it's the inner core values. We're not talking about now business context now, we're talking about generally. Same thing with even if you take a simple example of leadership, parents. Parents who only focus on the what and the how are normally not very successful, because not everyone responds the same way to the what's and the how. But when the passion comes out, when the driving force comes out, when there's a sense of value, and by sense of value, I don't mean always explaining the reason. I'm not such an advocate of always parents having to explain, especially to young children, you know, why. It doesn't have to be always a why. Because sometimes the inner value is communicated beyond the why. Sometimes the value is learning to control yourself and to do things that you don't understand. That in itself is a value. But that doesn't matter. But when there's a passion, when there's a relationship, when there's a guidance, when they can see that there's an inner fire that is burning behind and driving the what's and the how, that's what inspires people. Now, when a leader leads, the why doesn't change. A leader has to set a tone. You see, let's go back to this balance between leading and yet understanding and embracing the diversity that exists amongst everyone. So I think the way it works is like this. It goes back to the old analogy that we've given many, many times of the conductor conducting the symphony orchestra. There's nothing greater, nothing more beautiful than a symphony being played by many different instruments, right? So that's the analogy of diversity. Each instrument plays differently. Each instrument has different contribution to make. Each instrument brings another level of beauty and harmony to the tune and to the melody and to the musical piece. So, in other words, with the orchestra, every instrument has a different how and a different what. You play differently, it's a different sound, your skill is different. Not everyone has one skill, can play all instruments. It's just a different. Each musician has different skills. Some have skills to play keyboard, otherwise play trumpets. Whatever the case is, different types of instruments. But the why never changes. The conductor communicates the why. The better the conductor, the better the passion that he communicates. The better he brings everyone together with their differences and remaining different. When they stop following the conductor, instead of being in a harmonious melody, it becomes a very, very painful, chaotic noise. When they play in symphony, when they follow the tone that the conductor has communicated, the passion, and the greater the conductor, the greater the excitement. You ever watch, you watch a conductor, one of the most beautiful things about watching a symphony is watching the conductor, if they're a good conductor, right? You see the excitement, you see the bringing it together, it's like an amazing thing, right? That doesn't change. You've got to follow the leader. Each instrument's got to play the way they play. And maybe even some of the instruments that are played are instruments that maybe cannot even be played by the conductor. Maybe the conductor doesn't even have the skill to play some of those instruments. But he has the skill to set the tone. He has the skill to communicate the foundation. He has the skill to communicate what tune are we trying to achieve here? What outcome are we trying to achieve? What's the driving force? What's the foundation of this process? And that's the difference. A true leader communicates the values. Parents set values in their home and they do not compromise the value system depending on how each child wants to do things differently. The foundation remains the same. A true leader of a community, of an organization, of whatever it is, has a certain why, and the why doesn't need to change. The why is the organization. It is the institution. It is the community. It is the driving force. It doesn't change according to everyone's whims and wants and differences. Because the leader sets that, and he leads, or she leads, and it sets that tone and that culture, and that doesn't change. But what does change is the expression sometimes of the how and the what. That changes. Because each person maybe has a different way of doing it. Each person has a different way of implementing it. Each person has a different skill and contribution to bring to the table. And that's the challenge of a leader on all levels. However great the leadership circle of influence is, That's the balance, and it's a difficult balance. The balance is, on the one hand, to be able to set the tone and create the value system, even when it's not popular, to be able to create a foundation that is effective, even when not everyone likes it. But at the same time, to be able to give everyone a chance and to understand the diversity of everyone's thinking, to be able to express and to contribute to the development and the nurturing of those foundations in a very unique way. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling God. He said, you've got to appoint a leader that on the one hand can understand the diversity of every single person, can embrace it, can appreciate it, can nurture it, but not out of weakness. It has to be an ish. A person who's humble enough to be able to listen to every difference, to listen to every person's different contribution, and yet tie it in and lead from the front and create strength even when it's not popular. It's a very delicate balance, but that's what makes a true leader. Am I making sense? Is that clear? Okay. And then he goes to the next thing. And he says, it's got to be someone who will just use the exact terminology, a person who will go out and come in before them. What does it mean to go out and come in? So first of all, in a very cliched way, but a very, very fundamental way, the commentaries say that the key phrase here is lifnehem, in front of them. A leader leads by example. A leader shows how it has to be done. A leader gets their hands dirty. A leader is someone who will actually go out there and demonstrate, not lead from behind, not lead from some hidden place, but lead in the open. Asher yetzei lifnehem, will go and set the tone and explain to them what has to be done. That's one idea of going out and coming in front of them. Right. The great commentary, the Sefarna, explains it a bit differently, and also a very, very fundamental concept of leadership. And he says the following. He says, what does it mean to lead them out and to bring them in? He says, interesting thing. He says, in terms of leading a nation, he says, leading them out is going to war. That's what I mean, leading them out. Going out means fighting a war. Bringing them in means bringing them back from war and making them focus on the running of the country, right? But in here lies a very, very fundamental idea, because as we've spoken about many, many times, we spoke about it last week even, the true ability of leadership is to train people to use all the resources of their personality. Right? The Chesed Gvura idea that we've talked about so many times. A true leader has to be able to train people and inspire people when to use the one and when to use the other. And it goes back to the diversity of everything that we talked about before, because everyone has different strengths. And every strength is important. Every strength is important. God didn't create any part of our personality that is not useful. When we talk about chesed and gvura, sometimes we always, by default, imagine chesed as being a good thing, gvura as being a bad thing, but it's not true. Gvura is a strength. Even we take it down a level and we talk about things like tolerance and intolerance. If you ask the average person, tolerance is a very good thing, intolerance is a very bad thing. But it's not true. Depends when. Yeah, generally speaking, a tolerant person is an easier person to deal with and to get on with, and it's nice to be around tolerant people, where it's not so nice to be around intolerant people, right? True. But that's when the person's identity becomes tolerant or intolerant. That's not the personality that's a problem. Intolerance, God didn't create it, wouldn't have created it, wouldn't have a place. Intolerance has a very, very important role to play. We have to be intolerant to evil. We have to be intolerant to things that are bad, intolerant to things that can threaten us or the lives of things that are people around us, whether physically, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, whatever the case is. Intolerance has a very, very important place. It's when it's used wrongly. Just a few weeks ago, we had a story that needs a separate discussion to understand properly, but nevertheless, it's a story of great strength, the story of Pinchas, when he stood up against morality and he actually killed someone. Now, this is not a recommendation to go out and kill people, but right, and that needs another shiur to understand the parasha. But there's a very, very beautiful sentence that's in the Chumash, because what happened was, I might have mentioned this once before, what happened was, after the story of Pinchas, Pinchas got a real compliment from God, and he was awarded a tremendous reward. He was made into a Kohen, whatever the whole story was. And God said, and because there was what happened was, when the Jews lapsed into this whole experience of immorality with the daughters of Midian and so on, there was a plague that broke out as a punishment from God. And when Pinchas stood up against a public display of immorality and did what he did, the plague stopped. And God said to Moses, you should take Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron, the Kohen, and reward him, right? Why? Because he says, I'm going to give him my covenant of peace. Briti Shalom, covenant of peace. That's a strange thing. If you look at the story, Pinchas didn't seem like a guy of peace. He seemed like a real warrior, a guy that was prepared to fight, get up, take a sword, go out there and do what he needed to do, right? And yet, he's awarded this covenant of peace. Why? The secret is in the first verse of that portion where we say that Pinchas, who was he? He was the son of Elazar, who was the son of Aaron. Aaron was Moses' brother. What was Aaron famous for? Peace-loving person. See, because what happened was, the commentaries explain, after the story of Pinchas, Pinchas had a lot of criticism. Like, people started criticizing him. Who does he think he is? He wasn't necessarily in the position of leadership, position of authority. Who does he think he was to stand up there with a sword and do what he did? And who said he did it for the right motives? And was it right? Maybe he's just a cruel person. Maybe he just loves fighting, right? So there's a beautiful verse about Pinchas' story that gives away the answer. And it works like this, and it teaches us such a fundamental principle about how to use our personality. And this is where leadership comes into it, of training people how and when to use the character traits that they have. And the verse says like this, and the whole story when this whole thing broke out, and they were immoral, and the Chumash tells the story of Pinchas taking the sword, the spear, and actually killing a leader, the leader of Shimon, and that leader of the Cosby, the princess of Midian. And the Pasuk says three words, Vayar Pinchas, and Pinchas saw what was happening. Vayikach Romach Beyadon, he took a spear and he went out and did what he did. He saw what was happening, and then he took the spear, he took the sword. So I once heard from an uncle of mine, he said, you know what the interpretation of this verse is? Like this. The secret is that Pinchas saw, and then he took a spear. Some people walk around the whole day with a spear, with like looking for an opportunity to use it. Pinchas could use it when he needed to, but he didn't walk around with a sword. He didn't walk around with a spear. You see, that's what goes back to the comment of intolerance that I made before. If someone is intolerant because they're an intolerant person, that's very bad. But if someone uses the character trait of intolerance when it needs to be used because it's a response to something which calls for intolerance, that's a beautiful thing. That's a holy thing. Not to be overused, but that's a holy thing. Because sometimes it needs to be used. I'm just giving tolerance, intolerance as an example, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, this is where a leader comes in. Because some people will lean more to love, some people will lean more to intolerance. You've got to train people when to use what. You've got to appoint a leader that will be able to lead this nation and will walk in front of them and lead them to take them out and to bring them back. Take them out, in other words, we'll teach them when it's okay to be aggressive, when war is appropriate, when war is not immoral, when war is a moral thing. We'll also bring them back and tell them, Maspik, it's enough. Now you come back and focus on building. Focus on building the country. Don't focus on war. There's such a topical thing nowadays where countries mix into other countries in America, and it's a discussion in Israel even when to use force. Just last night, there was a discussion that we heard at the Witzel function from Bugi Yalon, which was a beautiful analysis of using the stick but knowing when to use it and how to use it and how much to use it and so on and so forth. It's a hard thing. It takes real leadership. He presented it very beautifully. It's a very, very difficult thing to know when to use it and when not to use it. Because when you have to use it, it's moral. When you have to use it, it's holy. When you don't have to use it and use it, it's evil. And that's where the balance is. So Moses is saying, everyone has different strengths. Everything God created has a purpose. Warfare has a purpose. Fighting has a purpose. But the ideal is peace. We know that. So going out and coming back in. Building is much better than fighting. Building a country is so much better than diverting your attention not to build but to go out and fight an enemy. So you've got to appoint a leader who will be able to lead by example but will also be able to teach and to train when to use war, when to stop it. Because sometimes if you use war out of nature, then it's hard to stop. If you're intolerant because that's your personality, it's hard to stop. Pinchas didn't want to be intolerant. Pinchas only saw a situation that needed a sword, so he took it. As soon as the situation was finished, he put down the sword and went back to being a peace-loving person and was awarded by God with the gift of peace. So that's the third thing. The third thing is, it's got to be a leader who can train everyone and guide people when to use force, when not to, when to go out, when to come back. Then we come to the which the fourth thing, which is actually probably the most challenging for a leader in a way. And he uses the thing, he says, who will... So the one is to go out and come in before them. And then he says again, is one who will lead them out and bring them in. What's that fourth thing? Fourth thing is what Rabbi Sacks calls timing and pace. Sometimes a leader, and again, a leader on all levels, is passionate about something. Sometimes a leader wants to, a leader always has to lead, but there's different ways of leading. And we know that the greatest success of leadership is when you train those who you lead to do things on their own. I told you that story a few weeks ago about not lighting the candle, but giving them the match. The ultimate success of leadership is empowering people to do things on their own, not to be passive, but to become partners, so to speak. However, a true leader has to know the right time to do it. And this is a great challenge for people, leadership. It's a great challenge for parents, for leaders, for guides, for any leadership on any level. Sometimes when you're very, very passionate about something and you know that it's very, very important, and you know that you need to inspire others to connect to something so critical, sometimes the passion makes us do it prematurely. And we do it prematurely, it's destructive and doesn't work. It's a very, very important thing. So if we can take a little bit of guidance from an interesting description of what happens when the Jews leave Egypt. Very interesting thing. Jews leave Egypt and they come to the Red Sea. And they suddenly are trapped. They're confronted. Egypt is pursuing them from behind. The sea is trapping them from the front. There's nowhere to turn. And they start to panic. All different opinions, the Midrash says. Some of them want to actually fight. And what does Moses tell them? Stay put. Do nothing. Do absolutely nothing. And uses the term and he says, Hashem milachem lachem, God will fight for you, and just remain silent. Remain silent, God will do the trick for you, and he will fight the war. Don't worry about it. Interestingly, a couple of weeks later, they get attacked by the famous enemy Amalek, the Amalekites. And they're being attacked. They're under threat. Moses comes to them by advice from God. And God tells Moses, "B'char lanu anashim, recruit, create an army, pick 1,000 people from each tribe, and go out and fight Amalek. God will help you, but gotta go fight." And the Torah tells us a story, interesting story, that the Jews went out to fight. They won the war, but what happened was Moses went up on the mountain. As they were fighting the war, they're coming near the Mount Sinai. He went up on the mountain, and Moses lifted up his hands. And it says a very strange thing, that when Moses would keep his hands in the air, the war would go well. If Moses' hands would drop, the war stopped to go well, right? And what happened was, so they had Aaron and Hur, his brother and his nephew, holding up his hands so that his hands would be up all the time, so the war would go well. So a couple of things. First of all, what's the purpose of the hands? What is that all about? And second of all, what changed all of a sudden? A couple of weeks later, they're being attacked. God says, do nothing. Stay put. Do nothing. Suddenly, a few weeks later, they're being attacked. Make an army. Create an army and go fight. Is it? Which one is better? And there are many, many interpretations, but in the context of leadership, I'm sharing with you this one. The ultimate purpose is not to remain passive. The ultimate purpose is not to stay put. God wants, all fundamental to Jewish believers, everything we have comes from God. God provides our sustenance, God wins our wars, God provides the miracles, our survival, our existence, everything depends on God. But God wants us to be partners, physically, spiritually. He wants us to earn a living, he wants us to create that vessel, as the mystics call it, for God's blessing to flow into. He wants us to pray for good things to happen. He wants us to make an army, he wants us to fight. All of these things, he wants us to be part of the process. He doesn't want us to be passive. Which is why when Amalek attacks, God says, I'm going to win the war for you, but you need to fight. You need to be part of the process. Amalek wasn't just a physical war, by the way. Amalek wasn't just a physical nation. Amalek was a spiritual nation, a spiritual evil, which requires fighting against. And that physical war was symbolic and represented not just a physical war, but it was a spiritual war as well. The whole concept of Amalek and the ego and the arrogance that is, it's not for now, but the whole concept of Amalek. So you've got to get up, you've got to get involved, you've got to fight. But you've got to be ready for it. And when the Jews came to the Red Sea, they weren't yet ready for that. And Moses says to them, stay put, do nothing. This time I'll do it all for you. God says, I'll just do the job for you. Why? Because we know that the Jews, when they left Egypt, were a nation that had just come out of slavery. Which is why, you know, even in the Jewish calendar we have this concept. The difference between Pesach and Rosh Hashanah. Pesach, we have this concept where God schlepped us out of Egypt. The Jews did nothing. Everything was done for them. Why? Because they were so sunken physically and spiritually in the depths of the servitude and the impurity, spiritual impurity of Egypt, that they were completely spiritually immature. So they couldn't do anything themselves. God says, all I want you to do, just follow. Come out of Egypt. When it comes Rosh Hashanah, when it comes the whole season of Tshuva and repentance and so on, the theme, if you look in the commentary, is very different. God says, I'm going to give you the blessings for the new year, but you've got to do something about it. You've got to pray a little bit. You've got to reflect. You've got to prepare things. You've got to put in the effort. It's a different time of the year. Because the beginning of the journey, God says, no problem. You're not ready yet to do anything yourself. You're not ready to put in the effort yet. So I've got to do it for you. So Moses says to them at the Yamsu, he says to them at the sea, just stay put. At your stage, don't do anything yet. There's an ideal. The ideal is for you to get involved. The ideal is for you to fight back, but not now. You're not ready. And if you do it prematurely, it'll backfire. But as they continue their journey, as they get closer, as they get more connected, a few weeks later, they're attacked by Amalek, and now says, okay, now's the time. Now you've got to get involved. However, at the same time, when you empower people, when you lead them, often leaders make a mistake that when they think people are standing on their own two feet, they drop them. And people always need leadership. So when it comes to Amalek and they're fighting the war themselves, Moses sends them out. God sends them out via leadership of Moses to fight the war, but he doesn't drop them. He says to Moses, you still got to inspire them. And he goes up on the mountain, he lifts up his hands, and the Mishnah tells us, what was this business with the hands? There's a famous passage in the Mishnah where the Mishnah says, do the hands of Moses win a war or lose a war? What was that all about? The idea was that Moses was inspiring them. He was lifting up his hands, so when they would look up and see Moses with his hands outstretched upwards, they would remember the real source of the success. They would remember where their inspiration was coming from. They would remember where their blessing is coming from, where their success is coming from. And they would fight, but fight with a prayer to God and fight with the faith and the belief that we're going to win this war. So a true leader empowers, but still leads. Doesn't drop them. He empowers when the time is right, not prematurely, and then also when he does empower, he's still there as inspiration. He still continues to motivate and to lead. So, and that's a very, very important thing, because often a mistake of leaders on any level make either mistake. With the excitement and the passion, they try to influence and aspire prematurely, and it doesn't work. It always backfires. So people have to be ready to receive and to be guided in the way you want to guide them. Otherwise, it's not worth it. And the second thing is that when you are successful, you need to still guide them. You still need to be there in the background. Even when you've empowered people, you still need to lead. So the summary, therefore, is that we talked about that in Moses is asking God to appoint a leader. In those few little sentences, he encapsulates what a leader is. He says you've got to talk about a leader that's going to embrace diversity and diversity of opinion and perspective. But at the same time, it's got to be an issue. It's got to be someone who has the strength not to pander to everyone's craziness, but to actually lead and to set values and to communicate the why and to create the foundation that doesn't change, that is the foundation and the essence of what is going to happen, and everyone will then contribute their unique contribution. A leader has to lead by example, and a leader has to inspire with the right timing and the right pacing and always remain there to lift and to inspire and to guide. So that's just in those little sentences. I think it's a nice explanation of the essence of a leader. So have a good week. And as I said, next week we'll have the last session on leadership. And then we'll do 3 weeks on fixing mistakes, how to fix what we've messed up. Have a wonderful week.